Welcome to episode 143 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Infection Control in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck, and I will be your host for this episode. We're going to be dealing with infections and the problem of infections and how infections are controlled in nursing homes. And we are not going to be doing that alone. We're going to have longtime friend of the podcast, Richard Mollett, on. Just to recap, I want to recap this because this is his sixth time being on the program. First, we had him on in April of 2018 for back-to-back episodes 63 and 64. We talked in both of those episodes. You should go back and check them out. We talked a lot about the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, how they regulate the nursing home industry, and how nursing homes are guided by their regulations and sometimes fined and cited by them. Then we had them a little bit later on, August of 2018, episode 83. We talked about the Nursing Home Compare website. So CMS has a website in which you can go and look and see what the scores are that are provided by CMS at the nursing home. So 1 out of 5 stars based on different criteria. And he talked about how that can be a useful resource, but not your only resource in finding a website. And that was a great episode. That's episode 83. Then we had him on in September of 2018, episode 84, on how to read inspection reports. So when a CMS surveyor goes to a nursing home based on a complaint or just based on a general survey, how to actually be able to go on to the Nursing Home Compare website and read a report to get more educated on a particular nursing home. And then we had him on in December of 2018 talking about in December of 2018, we had him on talking about the Long-Term Care Community Coalition's website, nursinghome401.org. That is Richard's pride and joy, his baby. That's his organization. And that website, which is nursinghome401.org, and we'll talk about that later on in this episode, but that is a fantastic resource if you have a loved one in a nursing home. So this will be his sixth appearance on the show. For those of you who don't know about Richard Mollett yet, Richard Mollett is the executive director of the Long-Term Care Community Coalition, a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving care for seniors and the disabled through legal policy and research, advocacy, and education. Richard has served on a number of state and national consumer government advisory groups relating to such issues as dementia care, nursing home and assisted living standards, mandatory managed long-term care, and nursing home financing and quality improvement. He has written and presented trainings on a variety of long-term care issues, including nursing home laws and regulatory standards, assisted living law and policy, dementia care and the use of antipsychotic drugs, caring and planning for the aging, and what seniors need to know about long-term care and elder justice. Richard is a graduate of Howard University School of Law and a member of the Maryland Bar, and we are excited to have him back for the sixth time today. Richard, welcome back to the show, time six.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Excellent. Well, great. Well, Richard, I really wanted to have you on because, again, the audience, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the audience knows that you work for Long-Term Care Community Coalition. You're the main guy. You are the guy in terms of long-term care advocacy. But something they might not know is that you have a lot of videos, and they're easily searchable and easily findable on your website or on YouTube. And one of them that you did not in the not-too-distant past was, and these are webinars and instructional webinars that run the gamut from, you talk about residents' rights and some of them, you know, how to file grievances with nursing homes and others. But the reason why I wanted to have you on the show this particular instance is because I watched a webinar that you did about infection control and infection control procedures in nursing homes, why that's important, how that can lead to trouble if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I thought that was such an interesting topic that I wanted you to address that on this episode. So that's kind of the genesis of why we had you back to talk about infection. So from a broad standpoint, Richard, in your research and your experience, is infection a serious problem? Is it a cause for concern in nursing homes?
I think, you know, I'm a consumer advocate, as you know, and so, you know, these are all issues, you know, resident care that I care about and focus on. But the infection control problem, to my mind, is just astounding. You know, and I continue to go back, and we do, you know, everything we do is based on data, and I know we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the program, some of the information that we collect. But I am, you know, I'm shocked to see how pervasive infection control and prevention problems are. In fact, according to the CDC and to other federal data, from 1 to 3 million infections occur in nursing homes every year, and up to 380,000 residents die from them.
My goodness.
Which is just, you know, considering we have 1,400,000 residents any given day in nursing homes in our country, the fact that 380,000, you know, have deaths that are the result of poor infection control and prevention is just, it almost is incredible to me, but it's actually the fact, and these are data, these are federal data. So it's something that everyone needs to be thinking about, everyone needs to be aware of, and cognizant of. If you're a family member, of course, if you're a resident, if you're an attorney or someone else who's working with the residents and families, that is something to really clue in on and to be, again, cognizant of and on guard for all the time.
That's an amazing stat. And those are, yeah, CMS stats? Is that right?
Pardon me?
Those were CMS stats that about the...
CDC.
Oh, CDC.
CDC and other federal data. So this is the Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, which I believe is part of the CDC.
Gotcha. So it seems to be, by the numbers, a massive problem in nursing homes. So
yes.
My question then is, does the federal regulations that govern the operation of nursing homes, is infection control or that kind of protocol, is that in those regulations?
It is. So, and it's in it in a number of places. So there are requirements specifically around infection control and prevention. And then there are also requirements around having a safe environment, including sanitary, including sheets. A lot of the things that you wouldn't normally think of, especially in a healthcare setting, you expect that the sheets would be laundered appropriately. You would expect that there would be, things to prevent, you know, vermin, including flies and other things that carry disease from coming in, as well as, of course, that all staff who care for residents or come in contact with residents are trained and held accountable for maintaining, really important protocols about cleanliness. So the requirements all speak to that. But I think it's important to remember, obviously the requirements are the foundation, but it is, it's incumbent upon facilities to provide a safe environment. I mean, if you're not providing a safe environment where people aren't getting infections, what are you doing?
Right.
People go to a nursing home for skilled nursing, but you know, we all assume that the environment is that people, our residents, are not going to be harmed by the environment itself. Whether or not the care is great is another story. But the fact, again, that there are so many, hundreds of thousands of deaths as a result of, from infection is so obviously concerning to everybody.
So we have infection being acknowledged by the CDC as a problem in nursing homes. We have federal regulations governing infection control in nursing homes. What are some of the basic protocols for infection control that would be implemented by the nursing home?
Well, something really basic that, you know, we all can keep an eye on is people washing their hands. I mean, that is key. I mean, we hear that, you know, if you ever go into, you're in the supermarket and use the bathroom, or a restaurant and use the bathroom, I think almost always see a sign that says, you know, employees must wash hands. There's a reason for that. And when you're talking about a vulnerable population that's being treated, that people might be touching their mouths or their eyes or, you know, providing medication to, intravenous drugs, et cetera. Of course, that, you know, the ramifications of those practices are increased incredibly. Right. So, you know, just a basic hand washing is so important. But I think also looking out for, you know, basic cleanliness in the facility. Are the bed sheets laundered regularly for your resident? Are the halls and the, you know, the corners of the bedroom, are they kept clean, mopped, et cetera? You know, what happens if there is an accident? If someone urinates or something on the floor, there's blood on the floor, is that cleaned up right away in an appropriate way? But I think it's really, again, just basic. Are people washing their hands? Are they changing when they use when they use an indicator for someone? You're checking people with diabetes. Are they washing their hands in between if they need to change someone who might be in a diaper? Are they removing their gloves and washing their hands and putting on new gloves, et cetera, when they do something else for that resident? All those things are just so, so basic. I mean, some of the stories that we've seen are just from unclean linens, you know, linens that have not been cleaned appropriately.
Right. So back, this is a while back now, but in December of 2018, we had you on the show as a guest to guide us through your website, which is nursinghome411.org, and all the great resources that website has for families who have a loved one in a nursing home. Is there any way that someone can use your website to research infection control? Are there any materials about infection control on the site?
Thanks, and I really appreciate it. Everything we have on the website is absolutely free to use, to download, to share with others. And I would say, you know, for families and residents and those working with them especially, a lot of this information can be used, you know, even to talk with family and resident council, to talk to the staff, to let them know, as well as for, you know, advocacy if you need to file a complaint, et cetera. But what you can do is if you just go to the website, again, nursinghome411.org, there is a search button at the bottom on the left-hand side. You could just search for any issues. So I, in fact, you know, before this program, I just searched for infection, and I came up with a whole bunch of resources that we have. And so we have, you know, an issue alert on that gives people some basic background information. We have some news alerts that gets at some of the information that we're finding to let people know what a serious problem this is, some of the reporting that's been out there, because sometimes, you can imagine with several hundred thousand deaths, the repercussions for residents can be too often be tragic. And then we also have, we published a lot of data in user-friendly formats as much as possible. We download them and from the federal database, and we put them into sortable state files. So we have periodically we publish data on nursing home infection control and prevention citations. So people click on that and download or open it up and search for either their state or their nursing home to find out if their nursing home has been cited. Just really important to mention, as an article noted from Kaiser Family Foundation noted a few months ago, as prevalent as these issues are, prevalent was the word that they used, there's almost never any punishment. And I think that's, you know, we've talked before about the issue in terms of the lack of enforcement, across the country for nursing home safety protocols, for the care standards, et cetera. And this is one where we can easily see, you know, again, the tragic result of that lack of enforcement. So enforcement is valuable. You can see if your facility has been cited, but that is not really the end of any query. We, again, always want to be on the lookout to make sure people are washing their hands, you know, et cetera, that there's basic cleanliness, just like you would want to have for, you know, yourself or your loved one, that's happening in the nursing home on a pretty rigorous basis because they're caring for so many people.
So let's say then that an audience member, a loved one of a nursing home resident, goes in, doesn't see nurses washing their hands, doesn't see nurses putting on gloves, maybe if they're changing a catheter or something like that, or they notice that a linen is dirty in a particular spot since last week, so they know that linens haven't been done. Right. What is a way in which they can file a grievance or start a grievance with the actual nursing home?
Well, there's a couple ways. What I would suggest, one, is if they have access to the long-term care ombudsman, that's often a very good place to start. And I think you had ombudsman on all your programs before. Mm-hmm. Every nursing home resident has access to the long-term care ombudsman program. If someone comes in on a regular basis, you could speak to them. Most nursing homes have their phone number. It's usually a toll-free number posted to, and that they can help you informally, file a complaint with the facility and see how that goes. So they generally are very helpful, I think, or can be very helpful in navigating some of these issues and being the first place to start. Every nursing home now, since 2017, is required to have a grievance officer. And so that grievance officer, it doesn't have to be someone just, that is just, sitting in their office like Lucy from the Peanuts cartoon, waiting for grievances. But it has to be a single person that's identified in the facility. It could be a director of nursing. It could be, someone in social work. And that person, under federal requirements, is required to take in any complaint that a resident or family has and to basically follow through with that complaint, whether it be on the floor or up to administration, and get back to that resident or family. And the resident or family member is entitled to get an answer to their grievance in writing if they ask for it. So in short, it's that, going to this grievance officer, you are always entitled to get your grievance, have your grievance heard through that officer, and have some written record of what the result was. Now, the facility is not required to do what you want. I mean, grievance could be about anything, but a facility is required to respond to your grievance, and if it's not going to, give you a written response, I should say, and if it's not going to respond by making some change or doing what you're asking them to, they have to provide you with a reason as to why not. And again, that's part of what they, what you can ask to have provided in writing. So those are two ways that, and of course, another, first line before, maybe filing a complaint would be, talking to the staff on the floor saying, look, I'm concerned, but it may vary, an individual's comfort level may vary. If you are seeing an individual who is not washing his or her hands and you feel like you're concerned that there may be retribution if you complain about an individual, then you might want to do something that goes through the ombudsman program or through a grievance process or speak to someone that you trust. But if it's more something that, the linens aren't clean, something that is more about an object rather than a person, then you may want to first complain with people on the floor or, go to a resident, if you're a resident, the resident counselor, if you're a resident, family counselor, if you're a family, and start talking about those issues there and, and then addressing them with the appropriate people in the facility.
Yeah, those are two excellent, excellent points. And I would like to reiterate that the long-term care ombudsman program, particularly in Georgia, these guys work their butts off on behalf of nursing home residents, and they can do all types of great things that, can resolve issues. They can, walk into that nursing home and basically mediate the dispute by sitting at a table with the resident's representative and the administrator or the nursing home representative and work things out and be kind of like a bridge
to
the care. I've seen that. I've seen them say, this is, I think that you should do this, this, or this. And a lot of times they have the respect of the nursing home and it gets changed that way. But either way, they're a great resource here in Georgia, in Georgia and across the country, but particularly in Georgia, our long-term care ombudsmen are the best. And in terms of filing the grievance, I think that you're absolutely right, Richard. I think that it's a lot of times it's going to depend on the confrontation comfort level of the resident's representative. So if your loved one is, if you see your loved one, their sheets are never clean, maybe you don't want to confront the CNA or the staff because you're not comfortable doing that. So maybe filing the grievance through that process with the grievance officer is better because they're may or may not be anonymity to that. And if you don't think that you can get anonymity through it and you don't want to call the long-term care ombudsman, then it might be something that if depending on how egregious the infection control problem is, it might be something that you would call your whatever the state regulatory agency. So in Georgia, it would be the Department of Community Health. So you call the Department of Community Health and you would file a complaint with them. And depending on how backlogged it is, I know in Georgia they can get really backlogged, but depending on how backlogged it is, they can come out and they can do a survey and based on your complaint, and they might get cited, they might not. But I know that I don't know if we talked about this in the past, Richard, but infection control can be a big problem, especially here in Georgia. We've seen and had cases dealing with everything from maggots in wounds to bedpans next to where toothbrushes are. So it can get pretty bad and lead to pretty bad problems.
Yeah, and I mean, I think those are all really, really good recommendations. I would just mention that in terms of what the state agency has to do, the Department of Community Health, that they, if there is a risk, to someone's well-being, then they should be getting in there as quickly as possible. So there are different ways in which it's expected that those state agencies are going to be responding to a problem. So you also want to think about how you are expressing the problem. One other thing we've been recently putting on our website are forms for families and residents to use to track their complaints. So, if you call up your state and you say, look, the sheets look dirty, it's been happening for a long time, you may not get the response you want, whereas if you say, this is June 6th. I raised this issue with the administration in March. I was told it would be fixed. It was fixed for a couple of days and then it happened again in April. I worked with my ombudsman. It didn't make a change in April and here we are in June. And this is something about which I'm very concerned. You have a record that you've kept that is, hopefully easy to keep, but also useful for substantiating any concerns that you have down the road, whether it be with the, with the state, with the facility, or, with the help of an attorney.
Exactly. I tell you that the linens are, they get me because I worked at a restaurant many, many years ago where generally in restaurants you contract out the linens, like the tablecloths and the napkins. Mm-hmm. And so once a week, whatever the linen company comes in, takes the linens and drops off the clean pressed linens in the little foldies, in little folded stacks or whatever. And the restaurant owner was like, man, I don't want to do this. I think that I can do it cheaper by just having a couple non-commercial washing machines and wash all these napkins and stuff. And obviously that didn't work out. It was terrible. They didn't get clean, but they were trying to still use them. And I can only imagine that this probably happens in the minds of some administrators. I can save some dollars by cutting corners on these linens, maybe not laundering them as often as they should, by saving, 10 or 15 cycles in a year. That equates to X amount of dollars. And that's a lot of times how these companies think, and that can lead to problems.
Yes, and that's again the other thing with the infection control and prevention. I mean, a lot of it is just basic hand washing, and it just drives me nuts to think that we need to really explain this to people, especially people who are providing care, that you need to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom or touch someone else's bowel movement, etc. But the sheets, you're so right. I mean, these are things that we really you don't need to go in necessarily with a magnifying glass every day. But when you are there in the facility and look around, if you see holes in screens, that's where bugs, can come in. If you, again, you see the sheets are not looking clean, if you see that the floors are dirty and not kept clean, those should be really strong signals that there's a problem.
I find, and I don't know if you find this in your research, Richard, but is that something that when a surveyor comes, I don't feel like they're really looking at that, like linens or infection control type stuff. Very rarely do I see in complaints where, okay, observed CNA not washing hands or whatever. I don't know if that was your experience as well.
It is, and that gets to the Kaiser Family Foundation report that I mentioned earlier that found that how pervasive these problems are across the country. Mm-hmm. And they said they're rarely cited or penalized, and that's exactly what we found, that they're, as I said, we have the citation data, but you cannot rely on that as saying, oh, my facility wasn't cited, therefore it's clean, because too many of the states and the state surveyors just are not paying attention to these things, as vital as they are, as much as we're really hearing the alarms now of the rate of death, et cetera, that they're just not paying attention. And it's not just, the things we talk about. It's even that equipment that, that touches residents, that is used to provide medications to residents, that sometimes there's dirt caked on it. Mm-hmm. You may see vents and stuff that are not clean. And, the citations for that are pretty rare given the scope of these problems.
Right. Well, Richard, this episode has flown by. We have really covered a lot of ground in terms of infection, and I think that we've given the listener a lot of good resources. But again, I really want to reiterate to the audience that they can go to nursinghome411.org, which is your website, basically, or the website of the Long Term Care Community Coalition, and it is chock full of resources. But I really encourage people, if they want to continue the discussion, they want to continue to learn about infection control, to go to that website and watch the webinar that you did on infection control. It's really great. And then do what you said, actually just search infection and look at the articles that come up and look at the information that comes up to learn more about that. Because at least in Georgia, it's a problem, and that's a place that people can go and learn more about it. But again, Richard, you are a fantastic friend of this podcast. This is your sixth time.
Wow! And we well, thanks. I really, I just before you go, I have to tell you, I so happened to be listening to one of your podcasts this morning, because I was just having a cup of coffee about 7:30 before I needed to get started for work, and I put it on. It was on fresh ulcers, actually.
Okay.
But you're a great guest, and just you guys do such great work, and it's a terrific public service. I really appreciate the opportunity when you have me on. So thank you.
I appreciate that, Richard, very much. Thank you. Thanks for listening. That's fantastic. So not only is he a listener, he's a guest. So that's great.
Yes.
anyway, but Richard, thanks so much. And we look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Always a pleasure to have Richard on the show. Infection can be a serious problem, and if you see something, say something in the manners in which we laid out in this episode. That's what I would recommend. But that is going to conclude this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast comes out, it drops, it publishes, it debuts 2 times a month, every other Monday in the morning, usually about 6 a.m. You can catch a fresh episode then. So in another couple weeks, we'll have a new episode for you. You can catch us online, which is at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our YouTube channel, or you can check us out anywhere you get your podcasts from. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.